Living on Earth needs your support to be heard each week. Kindly give what you can today by using the donate link to the left of this page. Thanks.
Well, from World Water Day to World Forest Week, the United Nations has just published its report, State of the World's Forest 2009. The global economic slowdown has cut down the rate of deforestation worldwide, but we're still losing nearly 30,000 square miles of trees a year. Forests provide habitat for a huge number of species of plants and animals and absorb much of the world's carbon dioxide. In his new book, Jack McEnany takes a logger's eye view of the forest and the trees. It's called Brush Cat, On Trees, the Wood Economy, and the Most Dangerous Job in America. Jack McEnany spent a year learning the logging trade in New Hampshire, and it's from the studios of New Hampshire Public Radio in Concord that he joins me. Hi, Jack.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You know, the title, you write that you were going to call this Brush Apes. What's a brush cat and what's a brush ape?
Well, they're both sort of old-timey names for loggers, independent loggers who, you know, work in the woods basically by themselves. But I showed the book to one of the loggers I was working with, Bob, and he liked everything about it except the title and threatened to call me Pencil Monkey for the rest of my life if I didn't change it. So I came up with Brush Cat. Bob wanted Guardians of the Forest, which I thought was a little over the top.
Bob sounds a little over the top, actually. These brush cats, these guys who are really good at it, can fell a tree within just inches of where they think it's going to, they want it to fall.
Oh, they can put it right where they want it, right where they want it. And that's all part of the magic of being able to do it properly and making a living at it. Because, you know, if you drop it where you don't want it to fall, it could fall on a young oak that in 5 years you could make, $1,000 or $2,000 from when you cut it. But if you miss by 4 or 5 inches, you've just ruined a payday down the road.
I was surprised, and I got to tell you, a little bit disappointed that they don't shout timber, you know, when the tree's coming down.
Bob always told me the best pair of eyes looking out for you are your own, you know. He would watch out for me, but he wouldn't guarantee that he wouldn't drop a tree on me, because that's how most people get hurt in the woods. It's not a chainsaw accident. It's a dead branch falling out of a tree. It's a tree falling in a way that you didn't expect, because maybe it was dead inside.
You say that it's the most dangerous job in America. I always thought that was commercial fishing.
Yeah, it turns out, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, it's 132 deaths per 100,000, I believe, for loggers, and 74 deaths per 100,000 for commercial fishermen. Now, every now and then, some profession like mining, you know, when the administration pulls all the OSHA regulations from the mining industry, there'll be a spike in that particular profession for a year or so. But logging is almost twice as dangerous as commercial fishing.
Bob, the logger, has a list of why it's better to log in the deep cold of winter. I wonder if you'll go through them for us.
Right. There are five advantages to working at this time of year, as enumerated by Bob. One, no bugs. Two, with all the leaves off the deciduous trees, it's easy to see what, if anything, is worth bushwhacking. Three, the days are short, and you can't cut trees at night, or at least you're not supposed to. Four, in case of an accident, blood flows significantly slower. And five, no bugs.
I guess even the green flies will eat you alive.
True.
It's also a generational business. This is one that really has a lot of tradition, and it's handed down from father to son, principally.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, sort of like making violins. You don't pick it up in your 40s. It's very complicated to make a living as a logger. You know, you're a single guy, or maybe two people, or, you know, a father and a son, and you're out there in the woods working alone, while on one side you have the state with lots of rules and regulations on everything about, you know, how and what you cut to the pole fords that you put across streams. On the other side, you have the mills that you sell to that were locally owned operations. Now, many of them, most of them, are owned by transnational corporations. And you're this one single guy who's trying to make a living out of a very, very complicated situation.
You talk about skid row. I guess a skid is what you use to pull these trees out of the forest. But that's where the notion of skid row comes from?
Yeah, precisely. Back, you know, in the old-timey logger days, when the loggers lived in camps deep in the woods and would come rolling out every 2 months or so with a big wad of cash in their pockets, They'd set up shop in a bar, in a brothel, and stay there as long as the money lasted. And where the loggers frequented came to be known as Skid Row, because that's the name of the roads that the loggers cut into the woods to harvest trees from. The word hooker also came from loggers. A hooker is someone who puts the chain around a hitch of logs and then pulls on it to let the skidder driver know to pull it away. And so this translated over into the brothels of, a man would get hooked, although... You know, I mean, honestly, who was doing the hooking? I'm not quite sure. I think I give a little too much credit to the loggers there, but that's where the word came from.
You know, we all know that wood's used in everything from cutting blocks to tables to, you know, paper, but you've got some uses here. I had never imagined that wood was used in.
Yeah, it's 10,000 products and growing, especially with the new technologies. They now can reduce wood to its basic hydrocarbons and then rebuild it so that it's really indistinguishable from plastics, except no petrochemicals involved. And, of course, you know, the houses we live in, the furniture we sit on, often the clothes that we wear, made from wood fiber.
Milkshakes?
Yeah, that's what really intrigued me when I first moved here in 1984. I went on a tour of the mill in Groveton, and they made this stuff called wood flour. I thought it was pulp for paper, and I asked the manager, and he said, "No, their biggest client for this stuff is McDonald's." And he said, "What do you think they put it in?" And I thought, "Oh goodness, the bread, the meat." He said, "Non-dairy shakes." He said, "Why do you think they're non-dairy?" So it's all cellulose, which I guess is good roughage.
I'm going to have to chew that one over. There seems to be a big difference between the forests of New England, the Northeast, and the forests of the Northwest, the way they're logged.
Yeah, well, you tend to have more monoculture forests out west. And, you'll see a lot of clear cuts because every tree that you have a contract for is, you know, the same kind of tree, so cut them all. Whereas in northern New Hampshire, Vermont, upstate New York, it's the transitional forest. You have a lot of conifers and a lot of hardwoods. Just really any kind of wood you'd want or need is in those forests. And so in order to log them effectively, you have to cut very selectively and leave the hardwoods behind to cut again in 5 or 10 years when they become mature. And because you want them to mature well, you're very careful about how you take the logs out of the woods that you are cutting so that you don't bark them and ruin the young trees. There's more of an artisan's approach to logging in the Northeast, I think, than out west.
Yeah, you refer to them as conservationists.
Yeah, not all loggers, but I would say the vast majority of them have a much greater respect for the forests than most of us. You know, they see it for what it is. It's not only a great resource, but it is almost like people who live on a small island, the relationship they have with the ocean. You know, the ocean gives, the ocean takes away. And that's the way most loggers see the woods. And they've been really, really affected by climate change. 20 years ago, mud season began around April 1st. It now begins on March 1st. That's another 4 weeks, 1/12 of the year, during the cold months when it's best to log, just cut out of their income. And it's a bottom line issue for them. They don't just they don't think of it in the abstract. It's their wallets that are hit. And Bob is actually, because the logging business has gotten so difficult in the past couple of years, Bob is thinking of using that BS in geology he has from Northeastern and becoming a teacher at the age of 50 years old because he can't make a living as a logger any longer.
Can you do the accent? One of the things I like about your book is that you really nailed that New Hampshire accent.
I don't know if I can do it without swearing. I'll try. Nice. You know, in the North Country, whenever anything good happens to you, whether it has to do with a day off from work or a new car, invariably everyone around you will look at you and say, "Must be nice. Must be nice."
Well, Jack, it was nice speaking to you.
Well, thank you very much. It was nice speaking to you, too.
Jack Mackin and his new book is Brush Cat, on trees, the wood economy, and the most dangerous job in America.
I'm a lumberjack. A new thing like a lumberjack, too. Cause I'm a lumberjack.
On the next Living on Earth, competing coal commercials. Advocates and opponents go head-to-head on TV.
We can be energy independent. Clean coal, America's power.
Clean coal is supported by the coal industry, the most trusted name in coal.
Hearts, minds, and coal ads next time on Living on Earth.